Hey everybody, before we get into the show, I do want to let you know that we have another live show coming up Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. at Maya Cinemas in North Las Vegas. We are going to be talking about the vampire ballerina horror comedy Abigail. This movie looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And joining me to talk about it are my wife, Gina Mazzoni, film student Perry Markle, and filmmaker and Sin City Horror Club founder Nick Woods. It's going to be a great time, great conversation. There's an enter to win contest going on right now on my website, piecingpod.com. You can find a link in the show notes. Enter to win some tickets. And otherwise, tickets are available from Maya Cinemas. And I hope to see you there on Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. Right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. But today on the show, we are doing one more special episode looking back at the films of 2022. And as we've done in previous years, my buddy TJ Cross, we have been friends for as long back as I can remember, and we've both been composers for a long, long time. He's joining me so we can look back at our favorite film scores of 2022. We each have a top 10. We get into some honorable mentions. We talk about a lot of great movie music, and that's coming up here in a second. Before we get to the conversation, I want to remind you, as always, to make sure you are subscribed wherever it is that you're listening to podcasts. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Good Pods or on Spotify or Podchaser, wherever it is you're listening and you are subscribed, of course, drop a 5-star rating. We would appreciate that. You could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And we have some really fun stuff planned for 2023, so come join us in the Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces Facebook group. Really fun time over there. So, with all that said, let's talk about some film scores. TJ Cross is back with us. We are going to talk film scores as we did last year. TJ, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you, buddy?
I am great. This is the last of the the special episodes looking back at the year that was, wrapping up 2022, and I am excited to do it with you. I think it's going to be fun, and we had fun doing it last year. I think this has to be a tradition, right? We got to do this every year.
This is like the fourth or fifth time now, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important you're the guest on this one, you know?
Well, thank you. I feel very honored. I have to say, I'm super proud of you, man. You've been doing some incredible stuff on the podcast. I do genuinely listen about once a month. I think your stuff's been amazing, seriously, when I have time. I'm really, really proud of you, man. Like, I remember like 5 or 6 years ago, you were talking about like you wanted to really start getting into this, and you've like come a really long way. And I just think you've done an incredible job, and I'm like super pumped for you in the future. So like, I really do appreciate you having me on for this, because this sort of ties me back into my original creativity. Even if I'm not really doing film scores anymore, I have an obvious passion for it. So I really do appreciate you inviting me on for this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I don't know. It was an interesting year in film. I mean, we talked about it on our top 10 films of 2022 episode, but we're still kind of in that weird space of like getting over the pandemic, but still in the pandemic, and movies are kind of greenlit or delayed or still coming out, or we've got older movies that were already filmed that are finally coming out. Like it's a weird place. And I think that will reflect a little bit in the scores, but there's also been a lot of great movies. I mean, I really genuinely think every year is a great year for movies, and I think there were a lot of really good ones and a lot of great film scores. I feel like my list is pretty varied, not just stuff that I maybe would normally pick, but kind of all over the place as well. I'm really excited to hear what you've got on your list, and we'll see if we have any kind of like overlaps or anything like that. But we'll talk more about the year in full as we're going through this. We might as well just start getting into them. What do you have for your number 10?
So I want to preference everything really quick before I get into number 10 with what I thought was interesting was a couple of these. I would say two or three of these. I actually heard the score first before seeing the movie. Now, everything on my list, I saw the film to make sure that it related, you know, the score was supportive of the film itself, not just a good listen outside of it. But a couple of these, I didn't even know. I'm sure you did because I know you are 100% aligned with everything that's out there. But a few of these, I was like, what is this? And then I went to go see it. So this happened for number 10, Kimmy by Cliff Martinez. I thought that score, first of all, I love the movie, but I thought that score was an incredible mix of like classical wind instruments. It was symphonic. It was dark. It was moody. And it actually sort of reminded me of your style a little bit at times. Yeah. And I thought that it really helped push the scene forward with the underscore. So I thought, you know, it was a perfect fit. I really did enjoy the score. And my favorite track from that score is Do You Hear Me, Angela?
Awesome.
Do you know the film?
First of all, I haven't seen it yet. It's one that I've been wanting to get to. But for some reason, the last few years, like everything Soderbergh puts out, I end up like, I don't know, it ends up on my back burner. And I, one of these days, I'm going to have like a little Soderbergh mini marathon catch-up event. But as for Cliff Martinez, definitely a big influence on me. So it makes me happy to hear you say that.
You're reminding me of you. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
His scores are always awesome, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the film. I haven't heard the score since I haven't seen the film yet, but I knowing what his stuff usually sounds like, I could imagine what it's like, and I'm really looking forward to checking it out. So great pick. I'll go with my number 10, which was originally on my honorable mention, and at the last minute, I had to switch it in and include it because I was like, How could this not be on my list? It's Alexandre Desplat's Pinocchio score from Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, of course, not the Disney Pinocchio. the standout track that I picked is Going to Town. It's just so much fun. It's, you know, this movie is very, first of all, it's beautiful because, you know, the stop motion animation and Guillermo del Toro is such a master at what he does. But the film itself, it's such a unique and pretty and kind of deranged take on the Pinocchio story. And the music just absolutely mirrors that. It's just, it's so weird while at the same time being fun and playful. And even though we're here mainly to talk about scores, the songs are great too. And they do make up a big part of the soundtrack of the overall film. So, you know, those kind of, even though we're talking scores here, those play a part in this as well.
Well, I'm glad you picked Pinocchio because it is on my list.
Nice.
And I think, you know, it's very classic Desplat. And I'll talk more about it when I tell you my favorite track. But I'm really glad you picked it because I agree with you. I actually loved the film.
Yeah.
It was a great film. And I think, like I said, it was a classic Desplat score that fit perfectly with the film. So, yeah, I agree.
Awesome. What do you got for number 9?
I am going to botch this composer's name so bad. Do you know the India film RRR?
Yeah, sure. I don't know how to say the pronunciation of the composer's name.
M. Kiravani, I want to say. When I mentioned
an admirable
earlier,
job there. Yeah.
Yeah. This was one that I didn't know about. And I actually found myself listening to the score because about a month or two ago, I was just like, you know, even before you and I spoke, I was like, great scores of 2022. And a couple of these tracks just popped up. And I was like, oh man, I listened to this entire score and I've actually been listening to the score while I'm walking around and hadn't seen the movie. And I finally saw the movie. My standout track is An Invite, A Gift. But I just want to say, I think it's like really bold. It was a really bold score. It was like culturally relevant while infusing like this theatrical flair or like modern classical scoring. It like when I watched it was interesting because like I said, I listened to the score first, But watching it in comprehension with the scenes, it was really amazing how much it matched and fit while being such a bold, loud, and surprisingly epic score. So, and by the way, some of the best action music I've heard in a long time. So, huge fan, number 9, M.M. Keeravani. I'm sorry if I mispronounced it, but great score.
Oh, absolutely. And that movie is just so over the top and it's so big.
So big.
Yeah. And the music absolutely fits. And just like with Pinocchio, I mean, another one where the songs are as big a part of the score as anything. And yeah, so I mean, it's just a great soundtrack overall. And it's going to be interesting. You know, we're not here to necessarily like theorize on the Oscars or anything, but it's going to be interesting to see if RRR can squeeze its way in for either, you know, score or song or even feature or something, because it has been a huge hit with critics. And I feel like people who, you know, actually discover this movie, it is kind of like a weird out there movie, but people who see it love it. So it'll be interesting to see.
Fantastic. I hope so.
Yeah.
What about you? What's number 9?
Number 9 is actually Prey, the Predator prequel reboot thing that was on Hulu, scored by Sarah Schachner. My standout track is Naru's Way. And I know I've heard people criticize this score because it's not as memorable as Alan Silvestri's original Predator score, which, I mean, you know, come on, how can you stand up to that? But what, you know, what it maybe lacks in being memorable, it's just freaking awesome. It's just like nonstop kick-ass and beautiful and tense. And it, you know, this is a movie that really I feel like should have been released in theaters and ended up getting like a streaming only release, but it made watching it at home feel bigger than it was. You know, it like really kind of just exploded with so much tension and action, and the score just kicks ass and it just goes so hard and is really a fun one to listen to, like just to listen to on its own outside of the film as well.
Well, haven't seen it, haven't heard it, but I definitely will. That's interesting. Yeah, I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah, I think you'll like it. What do you have for number 8?
So, 3,000 Years of Longing by Tom Holkenberg. And yeah, and the track is Song of Transference. This really blew my mind. Like blew my mind. I thought it was super guttural. You know, I mean, you know me, like I'm more of a classical Williams-esque kind of guy. I love the old like Hollywood sound, the Hollywood feel, but this thing just like was so raw and like the strings are like right in your face and the musically, the harmonies are so dense and close and it portrayed the scenes in the film so well. It's a spectacle and it matches, you know, its unique visuals. And I just thought it was a perfect fit and it's a perfect sound. And surprisingly, it's not something that I would think I would listen to outside of the film. And I've caught myself listening to a few, and Song of Transference is one of the tracks I listen to often. So yeah, 3,000 Years of Longing.
Awesome. Great pick. It actually is in my honorable mentions and it didn't make my list, although the film itself is one of my favorite movies of the year. I love this movie so much and it means so much to me, this movie. And the music is definitely part of that. I mean, it is an awesome score. And yeah, I think a part of the problem with 3,000 Years of Longing is that it was sold as like the next movie from the guy who made Mad Max Fury Road. And it's just not that movie. And the score isn't that score either. I mean, Fury Road's score is so insane and over the top, you know? And it's just like going into it expecting more of that is not the right way to sell a movie. But it's still a great score for what it is. And like I said, I love that movie so much. But my number 8 is going to be White Noise from Danny Elfman.
Oh.
I love this movie. I actually just recorded an episode on it today. This is Noah Baumbach's latest film, which he somehow got Netflix to give him like $100 million or something
dollars,
to make
this
really freaking weird art house film that nobody is going to like and nobody did like. But I love the movie. And the score, so first of all, the film itself features all these people, this family who are basically scared of death. They have this like intense fear of death, and they are it's very weird in the way that it's constructed, but in the process of their story, of the plot unfolding, there's this airborne toxic event that they're all running from, and everything starts to kind of start to take on characteristics of some of like the classic 80s either disaster movies, family movies, adventure movies that we know and love and we grew up with, the kind of things that we kind of fill our time with while ignoring that we're all going to die eventually. And I think that's a big part of the movie. And I feel like Danny Elfman is playing into the fact that we remember and love and have nostalgia for all these movies, a lot of which were scored by him. And so I feel like he's almost in a way playing the hits. He's like kind of going back and doing all these fun Danny Elfman things that you would have heard in all these movies, the Tim Burton stuff, The Simpsons, like all these things. And he's going back to all these like musical ideas in it. Mm-hmm. And it's makes for such a fun score. My standout track is called Teddy Bear, which is part of the scene where everything is hitting the fan. And it's just, it's nuts. And it's such classic Elfman.
It is 100% classic Elfman. And I thought a lot of Edward Scissorhands when I heard that score. And it's funny because, you've kind of changed my thinking on that, because for what I knocked it for, it's just, I'm going to spoiler, it's in my honorable mentions. Yeah. What I didn't put in my top 10 for was because it was so much Elfman, like you just said, like, it was just like, I was like, he's ripping off himself.
Right.
But in a sense, that's what makes it so great, like you said. Right. So yeah, I 100% agree. It is a great score. I loved it.
Awesome. Yeah. And I hope more people check that movie out because it's so good. But what do you got for number 7?
So this is interesting. So it's Where the Crawdads Sing, okay. Michael Dana. Now, here's the thing. I wasn't a huge fan of the film.
Yeah.
But the score and obviously the performance, what made that film better than it should be, I guess. And so therefore, I had to put the score in there because I do remember thinking, oh, this is one of those classic takes on where the composer is outdoing the visuals on the screen. And so I really loved the sound of the score. And I think it really did uplift the movie in whole. What really stuck out to me is I love the instrumentation of the songs. And I really like the minimalist approach to scenes that I think other composers would maximalist on. Mm-hmm. He sort of pulls back and I think it really draws you in. And so I don't know, something about that score really got me while I was watching it and it stuck out to me in a positive way. So that's where I put it for number 7.
That's an interesting one. I hadn't considered it in my list of things to go back to and think about for this list, you know, because for the reason that I didn't really like the movie that much.
Yeah.
But, you know, now that you're mentioning it, like, I feel like I should go back and listen to it. I mean, those kinds of like, you know, gritty South kind of settings are such like fertile ground for a great score. So like, I could imagine it probably is a really good one. And I'm gonna have to go back and check that out again one of these days. My number 7 is She Said from Nicholas Britell. Is, you know, one of the most exciting people working in film music right now, I feel like. And I feel like the last couple of years, like obviously Agape was such a, like a big thing when we did our top 10 scores of the decade from If Beale Street Could Talk. But the last couple of years, though, I feel like Succession has kind of taken over like any attention of him and his work. But this felt like it was like right back to like, wow, that's Nicholas Britell in a movie making a big, urgent, dramatic film score. Thank you. you know, that film is, it's a really interesting thing to try to make a movie out of, obviously, with the takedown of Harvey Weinstein. And it's like, there's a question of like, how are you going to make something that's so fresh and so new and that's so kind of somewhat open-ended still at this point? And like, is it too soon to make something like that? But I think, you know, aside from the movie actually being very good, I think a big part of what works is how great that score is. It just, it makes everything feel so urgent for like these reporters. If they don't like crack this case, if they don't get this story out there, you know, nothing is going to change. Nothing is going to get better in this particular industry. And, you know, pessimists like us, maybe nothing is going to get better, but it's still a good movie though.
Burn it with fire.
Yeah.
So I want to say I completely agree with you. Very exciting composer. It didn't hit me like the other works.
Mm-hmm.
So previous works. So it's interesting to hear, like, because it seems like you really thought this was like another step up. Yeah. But understanding how you feel like it attached to the film and its importance, I can see why it's on your list. It just didn't make mine.
Yeah. Fair enough. What do you got for number six?
My boy Reznor and Ross, Bones and All.
Nice.
The Great Wide Open is a track. I love this track, The Great Wide Open. I mean, you know, here's what I'll say. While its styling is nothing new from their collab, it's very much them. It's very much what they've done in the past as far as their style choices. Mm-hmm. What I love about it is they found this like way of doing the chordal structure to make the perfect blend of romance and horror, which this film is, yeah. Right? It's a horror romance. And so I just thought that is tough to do, especially from like a musical standpoint, to write something that has a romance and love vibe about eating things. So I thought it was a perfect fit. It has a horror sensation to it. It has a romantic sensation to it. And I was like, wow, that kind of blew my mind that they could actually pull that off in something I've never really heard before. So I was a big fan. Not something I can walk around to and listen to, but something for the film itself is fantastic. And so Bones and All, Reznor and Ross.
It'll come up later in my list for sure. Nice. And can I assume Empire of Light did not make your list? Because it didn't make mine.
My light.
Yeah, no. I did not like their Empire of Light score. It's like one of my least favorite Reznor Ross scores. But it's great that there's one that came out as amazing as this one did. So
yeah, and it seems like every year, right? They come up together at least one a year. It's amazing.
They just keep working, man.
Amazing. What about you?
My number six, I haven't seen this on a lot of lists, but it's on mine. It's a horror movie called Smile from the composer Cristobal Tapia de Vere, who did the music for The White Lotus. I think that's where he gets the most of his attention, the TV series The White Lotus, which is also an awesome piece of music. But this score is so freaking off-putting and creepy, and it's just like, it seems like he started with a traditional, like, modern 2000s horror movie score, you know, the big stabs and all that kind of stuff, the orchestral, but, like, you know, creepy and crawly and all that, but then just glitched the hell out of it in a way that's, like, it's practically, like, I joked to a friend that it sounded like my headphones were broken while I was listening to this score. It's so weird the shit that he's doing, and it really adds to just this unsettling nature of the movie and just how bizarre it is. And obviously with people just smiling at the screen constantly, it makes it even more creepy. And the standout track for me was Laura Smile. And this is just, like I said, more and more of that, like what are they, like, what's he even pushing to make these sounds happen? Like, it's just like impossible to figure out.
What and program is he using, right?
Yeah. Like what buttons is he hitting?
Yeah. So I know of the film, haven't seen it, haven't heard the score, so I don't really know much, but it actually sounds really interesting. Give me your quick take, your 3-second take on Smile, the film. You love it?
Oh, it's great. It's great. It's great. So much fun. And it's creepy as hell.
Well, I can't wait to watch it then.
Yeah.
I have a quote unquote horror score coming up, but we'll talk more about that later.
Awesome.
For number 5, and here we are breaking the top 5. These, I feel like starting here for me and you personally, there is a separation for me personally between 10 and 6 and 5 and 1. Okay. So number 5, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Sun Lux. It's just, I mean, first of all, if you know anything about me, it's my kind of film. Yeah. I'm a huge Cloud Atlas fan.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of the same vibes in this movie. It's just epic, ridiculous. The score is epic, ridiculous. What are you thinking about? Your Day Will Come, and their Claire de Lune remix is just incredible in this film. I mean, I really was like the score is a tearjerker for me. Like, I love this score. It's so powerful. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. I can't stop raving about the score. Tell everyone about the score. I love it. It's fantastic. And it's right up my alley.
That's awesome. I've only seen Everything Everywhere All at once, and I really need to rewatch it. Like, I loved it. I thought it was great. And I thought the score was great at the time. I did revisit it when making this list, and I didn't feel like it worked as well outside of the film. And so I need to watch it again and hear the score with the film and see how I feel about it the next time I actually get a chance to watch it. But yeah, it's a great movie, though. And it's so much fun. And I can, you know, imagine why you would have it on the list for sure.
Where are you at 5?
5 is Bones and All. back to Reznor and Ross. My pick was By the Light of the Campfire. Just fantastic piece of music. And I feel like this is the closest Trent Reznor as a composer has been to like one of the instrumental sections of a Nine Inch Nails album. Like a lot of his albums would have like these like kind of ambient pieces on them, which kind of made you think like, oh, this guy could score a film one day, maybe. Like, it would probably sound really good. Like, I think it's called A Warm Place was on The Downward Spiral, and I think there was one or two on The Fragile. And this score kind of gets back to that sound, and it's just, it's haunting. It's got this longing to it, and it's beautiful. And yeah, I mean, this might be my favorite Reznor-Ross score since The Social Network, although Soul was awesome too, so...
So I'm kind of curious because I had said this is very Reznor and Ross, but do you feel like he actually is sort of, this is a different sound from his typical film sound, you feel like, and it's more towards like his rock sound?
Yes, that's exactly how I would feel. It definitely is different from like what we've come, like we were joking, like every year it seems like there's at least one Reznor-Ross score. Right. This feels a little different from any of those and more like getting back to Nine Inch Nails, but in a film score style. So yeah.
Nice.
Exciting stuff. What do you have for number 4?
The Woman King.
Right on.
Terrence Blanchard. The track I love the best. Well, there's actually two. It's The Woman King's main titles and Nawi and Malik. Like the film itself, I think it's just, I mean, I love the film. I think it's powerful. I think it's culturally relevant, obviously. I think the score itself is like heartbreaking and inspirational. And in a strange way, classic, even though it's following some culturally traditional music. And it's a score I can listen to both inside and out of the film. And I just thought it was a perfect complimentary piece to that film. I loved it.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite things about the movie. The score just like was hard as hell.
Awesome. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And it added to that whole vibe of like, just hell yeah and kick ass. Like, it was awesome. Yep. So
I loved it.
Yeah. Good pick.
How about you?
My number four is Blonde from Nick Cave and Warren Ellis. I know a lot of people hated this movie because of it taking on this fictional approach to Marilyn Monroe's life and a very negative and dark approach to that life. But the score is fantastic. So haunting, but beautiful, but full of dread. And the use of synths is probably a big part of what people don't like about it. Like, I feel like it just like it clashes with this like classic screen presence that you know we would expect, you know, this Hollywood royalty. But it fits so well and adds to that feeling that this film is trying to convey. And I think, you know, I don't know if people wanted just a straight up Marilyn Monroe biopic. Like, I'm not sure if that's what they wanted, but this film does not have that on its mind at all. And this score is a big part of figuring out what this movie is all about. And, you know, you talked about my music earlier, but I feel like this is like really of these 10, the most in line with something I would do if I was scoring a film.
It is a fantastic score. It's in my honorable mentions. I think you hit the nail on the head. The juxtaposition between the score not being a classic 50s, 40s, 30s, whatever Hollywood sound, is a perfect choice because that film was not a true to life story. It was telling a different sort of fictional take on some factual events, right? So yeah. I just thought the score was a perfect mix. It's a really, really good score, and I'm glad you picked it because it is on my honorable mentions.
Right on. Well, what do you have for number three?
Pinocchio by Desplat. It's just, you know what? You don't have to go to Juilliard. Listen to the score. It's a classic course in film scoring. I mean, it's literally a classic way of scoring a film. It's very Desplat. And, you know, I just want to say something I find really interesting. And you and I talked about this, I think, like 3 or 4 years ago when we did one of these, that, like, you know, while that's changed a little bit now, he was sort of the heir apparent to, you know, just saying the Williams and Zimmer, right? Like, he was the guy. Yeah. I think that's sort of changed now because he had his time. And there's some new up-and-coming composers now coming in. But what is so interesting about his composing style is he's always a hair away from a memorable theme walking out of the theater, yet you still don't remember any themes he wrote, if that makes sense. Like, they're so good, but they're just a hair away from you remembering them, if that makes sense. And I think it's an intentional style of his. And And I kind of like it because I think he just really is there to serve the film. And the track that I love is Pinocchio's Choice. It comes towards the end of the film. It's a classic, great piece of film score.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just so much fun. I think it's an interesting theory about his stuff. It's so good, but then maybe it doesn't necessarily stay with you. But then once you hear it again, you're like,
yes,
there it is.
Perfect. Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
How about you?
All right. Number three, I joked on our top 10 films of the year episode that I would be perfectly happy with The Banshees of Inisherin winning absolutely everything at the Oscars this year. Picture, actor, actress, supporting, screenplay, and score from Carter Burwell. Night's Fall on Inisherin is my pick for the track from this film. The whole film kind of feels like a fucked up fairy tale in a way. And there's lots of plucky instruments that create this haunting but melancholy, weird uneasiness. And it really accents and matches that central conflict between these two friends and this feeling of what is happening? Why are these people not friends anymore? It just doesn't make sense, and it's so affecting. And I feel like you could probably relate to this the same way I can, of just wanting to kind of be left alone with your music. I get that feeling from this character in the movie, and it's a movie about that feeling, and it really just adds to just how much I appreciate this score. And Carter Burwell is just amazing, and I feel like we don't get enough Carter Burwell scores.
So it's my film of the year, just FYI, but I couldn't get into the score. It's really interesting, and so I feel really weird, because after I put my list together, I'm sure you do this too, I look at other top 10 lists to see how far off am I on everyone else?
Right.
And obviously that score is on everybody's top three, almost everybody's top three. And so I'm what is wrong with me? What am I missing out on? And I think part of my problem is I unlike a lot of people, I like to listen to my scores outside the films. Mm-hmm. And it's a tough one to listen to, I feel like, outside the film. And I think that, unfortunately, that bias of mine is hurting it, because it probably is a great film score that I just can't listen to walking around. If that makes sense.
I think that's a fair criticism, because I think it would be a tough one. I have, while leading up to this, I listened to it a bunch, but I can see how it would be one that, it's a little dark, a little dreary and weird. So maybe, that might take away from it for some people. I could see that.
Yeah.
Well, we're on to our top two. What do you have for number two?
Pearl.
Oh boy. This was
Pearl by Bates and Williams. Let me just tell you something, man. Wow, what a score. What a score. Again, the juxtaposition between what is happening on screen and this classic 1939's Max Steiner. I never thought that I would be romantically involved with a girl masturbating with a scarecrow. Okay.
Right.
The music playing under that is just it's perfect. It is so brilliant. It's perfect. I mean, I just try to think about back in my days when I'm scoring a film, I never would have, and obviously there's a correlation with the director and they're all working together to try to make, but I never would have come up with that. Never in a million years would I have come up with a score. You know, and I realized the projectionist thing, and I realized Hollywood and film, but it just, I listen to this score all the time. It's freaking beautiful. My wife heard me like listening to it, and I'm like, oh, you want to know what the film's about? You know, it just, you never would think that when you listen to the score. I really struggled. This almost was my number one. Yeah. I really like, obviously, as you can tell, I'm head over heels with this, and just a few standout tracks: The Ride Home, The Projectionist, and obviously the main titles, because the main titles are just that classic 1930s Gone with the Wind styling, which I love.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great. It was one that it didn't make my list, but it was one that I was like going back to and listening to a bunch in the lead up to this. And it's fantastic, and it's a great movie. And great pick. I'm glad it's on yours.
What do you got?
My number two is Crimes of the Future, the new David Cronenberg film, score from Howard Shore. And I think this might be like the most memorable melody this year out of all of these movies, which is so weird because it's such a weird movie. But it's such a Cronenberg score. It's so futuristic and weird, and it's got a lot of industrial bent to it. And it's got like this classic sounding melody, but then it's just really just screwed up and turned into something very futuristic and weird sounding. Sark Lust is my standout track, which you definitely hear that main theme in, but it comes back throughout along with lots of industrial pounding drums and drones and all kinds of things that match the very screwed up, you know, subject matter of the film.
I thought that was going to be your number one, because I remember listening to this saying, this is a David track. This is a David score. This is something he's going to love.
Yeah.
Not my favorite, not on my list, on everybody's list. And I value it a ton, and I think it was a great score, and I'm glad you picked it, because I you know, there's a place for it for sure.
Absolutely. I can't believe we're at a number one. I'm excited to hear what you got. What's your number one?
All right. So Dave, I'm sorry. You're going to have to give me a few minutes here because I cheated. Okay. I remember last year you were like, wow, a lot of documentaries on your picks. There was like four of them. Yeah. And there's a reason for that. We don't have time on this podcast to talk about it, but I just think that documentary film scoring has come a long way and it's more relevant. But anyway, outside of that, I picked two. I did want to pick a classic film because I do think it's the best score of the year. But I also, if you're going to give me like 2 minutes, I want to call out one documentary film because I think it's an amazing score as well.
Okay.
So for me, it's going to be The Batman.
Nice.
By Michael Giacchino. The track that stands out for me, and I want to talk about this for a minute, is For All Your Pennyworth. So I have a big love, not hate, but a love or miss relationship with Giacchino.
Yeah.
I'd mentioned Desplat earlier, who was for the heir apparent, I felt like, to classic sounds. But I think Giacchino has been around for 25, 30 years. He was kind of the guy that I think Hollywood tagged as the next guy. Really, yeah. Like he's the next thing that's going to be the William Zimmer, the future. And, you know, it's interesting because I can't really say he missed, because he has had a lot of classics, Incredibles, a ton of stuff.
Sure.
But I feel like he's let me down at times. That's the best way I could put it. But this score to me was so very Giacchino and so very not. And I was so proud of the work he put into this. I liked the film. I know a lot of people love the film. I liked it. I wasn't head over heels about it, but I did really like it.
Yeah.
But I thought the score was just so dead on in every scene. And I thought it was in your face when it needed to be. I thought it was pulled back when it needed to be. I thought it was so not his typical work outside. And here we go. Outside of For All Your Pennyworth, which was a very Giacchino emotional track. It's a scene when he's talking to Alfred about family. And what is interesting about that track is he's used it probably 5 or 6 times. From a chord structure. It's the same chord structure he's used in his when he was scoring Lost and a bunch of other. It's like his emotional fallback. Anytime there's an emotional scene, he falls back to the same sound. But what stuck out to me was it was so mature and so relevant to this film that he changed it just enough that I was like, wow, like you've elevated in your 25, 30 years of working in the industry. And it really was a very personal, like composer-esque view of the film. And I just was blown away by the score. A huge fan. And I don't know, there was just a lot tied to it. I've been a Giacchino fan since for like 30 years, and it was just really cool to see the maturity and growth. So The Batman was my cinematic pick. And I just want to throw out there really quick from a document film, Savage Waters. I don't know if you've heard of this. It's kind of a small film.
I've seen the name. I haven't watched it though.
Okay. It's about chasing this mythical wave that was written in like this 19th century treasure hunter's book about the biggest wave that anyone's ever seen. Right. And they sort of follow this book's location, and it tells a tale of trying to surf the biggest wave in mankind. And Enna Waves are the composers, Brewer and Phoebe, and they do this thing. The track's called The Wave. It's very nostalgic 80s synth. And I don't know if it's just because of that, but the entire score is made up of that. And it is just, it would be a brilliant EP. Like it's just, it's an incredible album. And the film is really interesting too, but the album, the music just really hit hard, hit me emotionally. I think it's because like I'm 40 something and I'm like a child of the 80s, you know, but like it really grabbed me. And so just wanted to give that a shout out to anyone who hasn't heard of it. Maybe go give it a listen.
Yeah, that sounds like an interesting film, and the score sounds like it would be right up my alley. I'm excited to check that out. And as for The Batman, made my honorable mention. I mentioned this when we covered the movie back when it first came out. I feel like it's the best theme of the year, wrapped up in a score that's a little repetitive. You know, and so that's like the only issue I have with it. It's still awesome. Like if you listen to that main theme, it's so good. It's ridiculous so how good it is. And Giacchino's awesome. Like, you know, so we should all be so lucky to write something half that good. You know what I mean? But
have that career.
Yeah.
So what are you, I'm dying to know your number one. I think I know given what I've heard so far, but what's your number one?
My number one is a movie that nobody gives a shit about, but I love, and it's called Windfall. It's a little movie that came out on Netflix earlier in the year, and it came and went. The composers are Danny Bensi and Sondra Jurians, and this score is just fantastic. It stuck with me all year long. It's been my favorite score. As all these other movies came and went, it's stuck as my number one ever since this came out. My key track is I've Got Your Gun. Although there's so many tracks on this I could pick out. The film is about a guy who's kind of a loser who decides to rob a tech billionaire and his wife who are alone in their vacation home, and none of it goes well. It just like goes wrong from step one. And the score, the film, a lot of people compared it to like a Hitchcock type thing. You know, it's a very like criminals gone wrong kind of noir styled thing. But then because of everything going wrong, it kind of gets a little bit of a Coen Brothers streak to it. And the score just is so playful while these people are just fucking up so badly. And it almost feels like it's taunting them in the way. In some ways, it kind of reminds me of Looney Tunes music, except for it's a lot darker and more noir style. It's so fun. It's so beautiful. It's so well done. And I do know that like anybody else I know who liked this movie also really appreciated the score. But it seems like this movie just kind of came and went, and most people just didn't really give it a chance. It stars Jesse Plemons and Jason Segel and Lily Collins, and it's basically just the three of them. It's, you know, obviously something that was made during the pandemic because it's, you know, such a small one-location thriller. But I really hope more people check it out, and especially check out this score.
Awesome. I don't know it. Like, I have nothing to say because I don't know it.
I'm not surprised. I had a feeling you wouldn't have heard of this one.
No.
Yeah, please do check out the score after we're done recording. I think that you'll really dig it and think it's really fun. Let's get on to some honorable mentions here. What do you have that we didn't quite talk about yet?
So I have a bunch here, but I'm going to narrow it down to three. And it's a little side note to each one. Elvis was actually one of them because I just like the remix stuff they did with that. Like, it's not an original score by any means, so it never would make the list, but I thought some of the remixes and basically like the audio mixing was really fantastic. So I really did like the Elvis score. A film called After Sun. I don't know if you know it.
Yeah, I know After Sun.
That's one of my favorite films of the year. And this is a honorable mention of remixes. The last scene in that film, I don't know if you remember, but they played like this remix of Under Pressure. Really stuck out to me. And I thought, like, again, it was a lot of good audio design in that film around the score. And then finally for me, it's going to be Babylon. Ton of fun sound in that score. But the only reason it didn't make my list is exactly what I expected anyone to compose for that score, because that film calls for that style of music. Like, you can't really get interesting. I mean, it's interesting music, but you can't really get interesting with that score because it's going to call what it needs for that time period.
Absolutely. Babylon's on my list as well of honorable mentions. It's like La La Land 2, basically, the score.
Yeah.
And so it's like you kind of don't really need to put it on your top 10, but it's really freaking good. After Sun's an interesting pick. I didn't love that movie. I feel like you need to be a parent in order to love that movie.
Probably, yeah. It killed me at the end when she's like yearning for... Anyway, yeah, killed me.
So I mentioned the Batman was on my list, of course. I also really loved the Beast score from Stephen Price. That is just really just awesome, just jungly type stuff. Like, it's just so exciting and good. The Wonder is another score that I really liked. It's a small Netflix movie with Florence Pugh. And that's really haunting, kind of. The reason it didn't make my top 10 is in a lot of ways it kind of sounds a little bit like the Smile score, and I figured I didn't really need two of that kind of sound on this. But if you were to take the Smile score and not glitch the hell out of it the way that they do, it would kind of sound like this. One more honorable mention.
Go ahead. No, go. Let me ask your final. Give me your honorable mention.
One more honorable mention would be a film called Io, a foreign film about a donkey, which sounds like it's going to be like a sweet and like beautiful or whimsical score, but is like industrial and over the top and insane. And this one was my number 10 for a while, but I ended up bumping it for Pinocchio. But it's freaking a crazy score. It's really good.
Oh, I have one more that I left off, Dave. Top Gun Maverick, just for the intro titles.
Yes, absolutely. Why not?
A fantastic remix of a classic song.
That was on my list as well of things to consider. But I was like, I'm already making it my number one movie of the year. I don't need it to be on my scores.
Best movie. I love that movie. Cool.
Yeah, it's so goddamn good. So that's our list. You know what? Actually, I do want to give one more quick shout out, one more honorable mention. There's this little horror film on Shudder called Deadstream that made my top 10 films of the year. And you'll appreciate this because it's so funny. as a composer, you'll appreciate this. So the film is written and directed by this guy, Joseph Winters, and also starring him. And he's basically a YouTuber, a live streamer. And he's recently been canceled for something. We don't quite know what exactly until later in the movie. But he's trying to make his comeback by spending the night with all of his streaming gear in a haunted house. And it basically becomes like a found footage version of an Evil Dead. Like, it's just a total horror comedy. This guy is such an asshole. He's so dumb and lame and annoying. And the haunted presence in the house just fucks with him the whole time. But the reason why it's on my score is, obviously, it being a found footage movie, you can't have a score, right? Like, it wouldn't make any sense for there to be score. So whenever something creepy is about to happen, he pulls out his tape recorder where he's already made some creepy music, and he pushes play
on it. That's fantastic.
It's so funny, and the movie is ridiculous, and it's just such an interesting way to add music into a found footage movie. So good for that guy.
That's amazing. Great. You know what's funny? Speaking of things that didn't pop up on any of our lists, and I expected it would be like my score of the year, and then I saw the film, was The Fablemans.
Yeah,
I was expecting something different, I think, score wise, and it fit the style of the film, the way they went with it, obviously.
Yeah.
It's the right score for the right film, but I was expecting like the final hurrah Williams, like epic, you know, classic Spielberg sound kind of thing. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting.
Very understated. Like the trailer's music was fantastic, but the movie was just like, you know,
pieces.
It was what it was. But yeah, that's our list. TJ, is there a movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
I'm watching a show. Can I do that?
Go for it.
It's so bad, but it's so nostalgic early 2000s for me. You're gonna make fun of me. Everyone's gonna make fun of me. Here's this. But my wife and I are into it. We're watching the National Treasure show.
Oh wow! Nice.
And it's been panned by critics. I don't think it's as bad as I think people need to put their heads back in the early 2000s. And we're watching, you know, National Treasure today. I don't know how it holds up. I haven't seen it in forever, but it's very early 2000s, and I'm actually enjoying it quite a lot for its, like, you know, we don't care about reality take.
Yeah, sure. I could imagine that it's probably pretty fun. It would be hard to get behind Nicolas Cage not being there, but, like, you know, we don't get a lot of adventure movies lately. I mean,
no.
We just talked about Uncharted last year, and that wasn't very good. So, you know, you need to fill that void. So, I get it, you know?
Yeah.
But
how about you? What do you watch? What have you seen recently?
Oh, boy. What have I seen recently? Well, I just rewatched White Noise. This week that we're recording this is the week of Megan, and Megan was so much fun. Score wouldn't probably make my list next year, but it was serviceable. But the movie itself
just is fantastic.
A blast. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I might go see it again this week. We'll see. But
nice.
Yeah. Well, TJ, this is great as always, and I'm sure we'll most likely have to get back together again. Is it June, July?
When Indiana Jones, baby. June. Yeah, June 28th. I feel like that's one that we might have to get together for.
Yeah, that would be
I fun. Might have to fly down to Vegas. I might have, we might have to do it. Yeah.
Oh, I'd be so excited. You know,
we should do it like right after, like you've done in the past with some of your other films. Yeah.
Set it up. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
We should do it. Let's do it. I would love to do that. Yeah, that'd be fun.
All right. All right. Well, cool. Hopefully we're going to make that happen, everybody. And TJ, thank you again for being back here.
Thanks, buddy.
Hi, this is Wax Trax Records here on 2909 South Decatur. We buy all your old 45s, your old albums, any type of music memorabilia. Also, we sell music memorabilia, albums, CDs, and a lot. Come on down to Wax Trax, 2909 South Decatur, or give me a call at 702-362-4300. Thank you very much.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about some of the best film scores of 2022. I'm realizing I didn't mention Babylon. It was in the running for my top 10. It ended up in my honorable mentions, and then once we got to honorable mentions, I just forgot to mention it. The Babylon score absolutely rules, too. So throw that in as a last-minute extra honorable mention there. Thank you, TJ, for joining me on that. It was a fun time. Like we talked about, hopefully we can get him back for Indiana Jones. We have talked about Indiana Jones since we were children, so we kind of got to bring it all around full circle. But I hope you all enjoyed the episode. If you're enjoying Piecing It Together, make sure you're subscribed wherever you listen to podcasts. We have a lot of new episodes on the way. So yeah, make sure you're subscribed. And if you like the show, you can rate and review us. We do appreciate the 5-star ratings. And follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And don't forget about our Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, Awesome Movie Year, and my music career. Speaking of my music career, we're talking film scores. I always close these episodes out with a piece of my music, so let's close it out with a piece of a film score that I worked on in 2022. I am going to play you an untitled piece of the score from the film Move Me No Mountain, which was a film I scored earlier in the year and premiered at the Nevada Women's Film Festival, and will hopefully be getting a release here sometime soon. You will know about it as soon as I do. But yeah, hope you enjoy this piece of music, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.